was Bill Belichick earlier in the week on his Circle Jerk podcast there with Matt Patricia, and that was Lombardi, I think, was the other voice that you heard?
Yep.
We'll hear more from Lombardi in a minute because he had a lot to say today. Good stuff from him, actually, as he's really on that wall for Bill still. And you heard Bill there talking about how quarterbacks can't play defense. He's right.
They said it was Brady against Manning, but, you know, those two never lined up across from each other.
Yeah, we know, Matt. We know.
It was all you, Matt. It was all you.
They lined up against. They lined up against him. It was Peyton Manning against me, Matt Patricia. I made that great play in the Super Bowl. You may remember, which he
best
took
play
credit
ever.
For. Best play in the history of that he went out there and did. It wasn't actually Malcolm Butler. It was Matt Patricia. But yes, that was part of the quote there, and it got me thinking sort of about Bill's philosophy on quarterbacks, and it really got me wondering how this all would have gone down in the event that they kept Bill around, drafted Drake May at third overall, which maybe Bill wouldn't have wanted to do, but just hypothetically here in this scenario, let's just say the roster's the same, he re-signed a lot of the same people, and I also think Bill might not have done that either. I think there's a lot of guys that got re-signed who Bill might have just let walk. I think that's something that would have happened in this offseason too, but let's take the reality out of it. We're doing a hypothetical here. Same roster, same draft picks, Bill Belichick in charge. Would Drake May have started week one? Would they have waited until week six? Would it have been some other time? What would the plan have been, do you think, under a Bill Belichick coached and not just coached, but, you know, running grand poobah, running everything? How would he have dealt with Drake May, do you think?
So we're starting with Drake May being drafted, right? We're not doing pre that. Like, we're not saying Bill would have traded down and not drafted Drake May.
No. We're saying that May got drafted and the rest of the moves that happened the offseason all happened the way that they did. It's the same roster, just Bill's in charge.
I think he starts in week one. I think Bill is more of a... Well, I think Mayo was also a football players play football, get better at football, but play football, that whole thing. But I think Bill would have had the yoke and the desire or whatever, and he would have done it. He would have made sure it would have happened. I don't think there would have been any Alex Van Pelt, Elliot Wolf-led dissenting opinions that would have gotten any carried any weight within the organization. And I do think Bill would have liked Drake May. Like, he seems like a guy that I think Bill could get along with. And he seems like, because Bill was trending more athletic. I do believe Bill was trending. This goes back a little ways now, but remember when he was all icky balooky about Tim Tebow when he was still at Florida? And like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. You got a guy that can run, and you got a guy that can throw, and he can do this. It's really the single wing, and it's this, and the whole thing.
Instead, let's get that tight end in the fourth round and see how that works out.
Yeah, so it did. You know, stuff happens.
Stuff does happen, yes. And he eventually got Tebow. You know, Tebow was a Patriot for one preseason.
That didn't work great either.
It did not.
But no, I think he would have embraced having a modern quarterback because... Even the Josh Allen thing. Remember the Josh Allen when Bill didn't get him? And he's like, I don't really see it. The whole MVP contender and the ESPN
the production outed meetings, yes. Which Brady cannot do now. But it was a production meeting and he said all that, yeah.
Yeah, and after that, he then started going over the top praise for Josh Allen and everything he can do and the way he can manipulate a football game with his various skills. I think Bill would have loved Drake May. I think he would have played him sooner. I think Drake May would be more advanced now than he is in this current situation and iteration. And now, would it be successful? Would they have more wins? I don't know that I can look into that crystal ball, but I think those two would have liked each other. Because I think Drake May, doesn't he give you the vibe he just wants to play football and be coached? Like, I don't think he has... he doesn't have we heard anything about Drake May with like a logo? Has he, taken out what do you call when you like Drake DM 10 or whatever?
Oh, and you did trademarks and stuff?
Yeah trademarks. Yeah, right, and remember there was all that talk of Mac doing that right out the gates?
Mm-hmm.
I think Mac fancied himself a corporation. I think Drake May fancies himself a quarterback. And I think that would have melded well with Bill.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Just personality-wise, I think that he would have been a little bit more of a yes, sir, no, sir, whatever you say, sir, like that type of thing. Which is why I think Bill liked Bailey Zappi more than Mac Jones. I think Zappi was a little more like that. And Bill tended to maybe lean in that direction when, even though Zappi was limited, and Mac was limited too, but I think we all know who the more talented QB was between the two of them and raw talent. And Bill, I think, leaned sort of more in that way. And I think that's what he likes about quarterbacks. He likes quarterbacks who aren't super independent thinkers, except for Cam Newton that one year somehow. But, like, he likes a quarterback who will just go along with the plan, not ask too many questions, not get too uppity about stuff, you know, like Mac Jones used to do, and just kind of go with what he says because he's in charge and it's his team. And, yeah, you're the quarterback and it's an important position, but don't ever forget, this is all about me and it's all about what I want to have happen here. And I think that, in general, Drake May seems a little bit more of a go with the flow kind of guy than Drake May, than Mac Jones is. Then again,
or Caleb Williams.
Or like, I think, sure.
I think Bill would not work with Caleb Williams. I don't think Bill and Caleb Williams could coexist successfully because Caleb Williams is everything you just said. Like asking why, like, you know, remember all the stories he wanted to basically break tax laws with his contract with the Bears. He wanted to do something so different.
He wanted to be like an owner or something? Or have like an ownership
there was
stake
all,
in the team?
All kinds of weird stuff that I think Bill would lose his mind over, like the guy thinking he's more than just the quarterback of the football team. And I think there was a hint of that with Mac. And I agree with your Zappy thing. I think Zappy was a Texas bred, I'm the quarterback, but I'm just a football player. Coach, you tell me to do it, and I'll do it to the best of my ability. And I think Drake May has more of that than Mac ever did.
Yeah, I agree. As far as the idea that the quarterbacks can't play defense, that's true.
Did Patriots he see Drake defense? May's tackle? Whoa. Did he see Drake May's tackle after
that's
the interception?
True. He did.
Maybe this quarterback could play defense.
Maybe he could. I wouldn't expect it. I know Mac Jones, after that that interception, got flattened by Chandler Jones.
Yeah, that
was so that wasn't good. That was that moment of Jones running him over. That was really emblematic of like the post-Brady years. I feel like that was like a snapshot of what it all looked like.
Here's
your starting quarterback.
He got mushed
into the ground. Like, I mean, it almost looked like he had to dig himself up out of the turf because he got pushed so far into it. And it's just, you know, that whole thing, which all happened under Bill, by the way. I love everyone's like, oh, yeah, situational football was so much better under Belichick. Yeah, tell that to Jacoby Myers and who was the other one? What was it? It wasn't Stevenson.
Stevenson.
Oh, no, it was Stevenson. Yeah.
It was Stevenson.
Stevenson
was
and
your
Myers.
Best players.
With the with that wild lateral play that ended up getting picked off and ended up getting Mac Jones buried in the turf. That all happened during the Bill Belichick.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of those.
So, yes.
Don't forget the Miracle in Miami, the ultimate situational football where they decided
with
to put Gronk on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Good call there. I don't know why you'd want your least mobile tackler who's never tackling anyone to be the last line of defense when you need a tackle.
I know. I think they thought maybe it would be a bat down situation. So they
it
put
wasn't.
The tall guy back there. That was not the situation. It was a Gronk getting spun around and deked out of his cleats. And yes, again, all happened under Bill Belichick.
What about the lateral? What was that, the Raiders?
The lateral?
Yeah,
that was the Chandler Jones play.
Oh, yeah. That's right, same play.
That was the whole the same play, but yes.
Yeah, there was a lot of aspects that were really bad in that play, so I understand, Stiz. It wasn't just Mac getting, so, like, there was a lot you could pick apart in that play.
There certainly was. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. When we come back, we'll hear more from Mike Lombardi, who today had a whole lot to say about blaming Bill Belichick for the current state of the roster. How much of this roster is Bill's fault? When should you stop blaming Bill Belichick? And we'll debut a brand new segment here, the brainchild of Andy Hart, the Patriots Pillars Power Rankings. Very alliterative. You can tell this guy's a writer. We'll get to all of that right after Stiz tells you what's trending. Back here at WEEI Afternoons, Christian Arcan, Andy Hart, you at 617-779-7937. We just heard a little bit of Michael Lombardi there, along with Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia on their Underdog podcast, as they were all really, really patting themselves on the back over the idea that quarterbacks don't play defense, and, you know, it's good to have the quarterback, but you got to have more than that. Can't just do that. You got to have all this other stuff in place, and we all know Bill's philosophy on the defense and what he thinks the quarterback is important is or isn't. I think that's all been, you know, when you really sort of figured that out was when he just signed Cam Newton on the 4th of July that one year, and it was just like, yeah, it was going to be Jared Stidham, but let's bring in Newton. Let's just throw him in there, and that should be fine. We'll work out good. It doesn't matter who the quarterback is. We'll be okay. And it seemed like for a couple of games, like maybe that was true, but then we realized it most certainly was not. But anyway, Lombardi is not done there. He was on Nesson today on the Foxborough Rush Show on Nesson, which I believe is it's a morning show, I want to say. I'm not super familiar with it, but he was on there. He was doing his thing, talking about the Patriots and about Bill Belichick, and it's kind of long, so we'll play it for you. We'll start and stop here, but here's Mike Lombardi. I believe this was today, either today or yesterday, on the roster right now and why everybody's just got to leave Bill alone when it comes to this roster.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, they all do it in the building, right? The owner does the same thing, too. I mean, you know, he was saying that he couldn't trust Bill anymore. He's got 6 Super Bowl trophies over there in his case. I don't know where you get trust from if you can. But look, this is all about trying to discredit the former coach who won six Super Bowls and trying to build a new program, which they have every right to build. They own the team. But the reality of it is they signed Barmore back. They signed Uche back. They signed Duger back. They signed Preppers back.
They signed who?
Duger Hauser.
Yeah, right. The MD. Teenage doctor. I did not realize that he was on the team. That's quite something. Yes, Duger. Very good. Now, I know where he's going here, and on some level, I kind of agree with this. You want to make a big rebuild, and you bring back all the old guys' players. It doesn't make a lot of sense. But go on, Lombardi.
Duger back. They signed Preppers back. They signed all these guys back. Bill's not in the building anymore. So when you sign the players back, you can't blame him for what's going on. I think that, to me, that's a little bit of talking out of both sides of your mouth. You can't say, you know, I had heard of a bad team when most of the players you signed, particularly on defense, are the ones you signed back.
Okay, you, you stop it right there, because I do think this is part of the argument. It's not the whole thing, but this is part of the argument that I hear a lot of Bill defenders keep saying, and Lombardi is nothing if not a Bill defender. So let's go ahead and break that down a little bit, because we've talked about this too, Andy. Is this really the time and place to criticize Bill Belichick and to blame him for the current state of the team, when instead of going out and upgrading the roster, which in a lot of places they still could have done, maybe not in every single spot, but in some places they could have, instead of just bringing back all of Bill's old guys? The players that they brought in from outside the organization were mostly backups. I mean, we're talking about Nick Leverett, we're talking about Austin Hooper, Antonio Gibson, and other guys who are not starters on this team, not primary players. And I think that there's certainly something to that here, what Lombardi's saying.
Yeah, so the first thing is Bill absolutely has fingerprints all over the lack of talent on this roster. We don't need to keep re-litigating it, revisiting it. The drafts, the playing catch-up. We talked a lot about it yesterday. You're playing catch-up. You're always playing catch-up for some of those drafts, and just swings and misses by him. Now, I also think this is sort of sneaking up on people in various ways. I think it snuck up on you a little bit this week in regards to the wide receivers. I think they've been quite open with this is a multi-year plan, and there are phases to this rebuild or whatever you want to call this at Gillette Stadium, which I would think thematically they showed you this year was about the foundational core of the team and retaining guys that you wanted to retain. Like the good that was left here, keeping the good. Like, you know what, you know, you do a house, you don't rehab generally the whole house, right? Like, oh, that bathroom was already done 5 years ago. Right. We can keep that bathroom.
Well, Dak Prescott just knocked his house down, is building a new one. So, I mean, that's,
I saw that. Right? That's what really rich people do. Really
very, very
stinky
rich people.
Yes. That happened not too far from me. People bought a $25 million mansion and knocked it down to build another mansion on top of it. And I'm like, that's amazing money. Imagine having that kind of money, $25 million just to tear it down.
That's FU money, yeah.
Generally, the normal people, when we do these things, like, oh, the bedrooms are actually in good condition, we really need to just do the kitchen and this one bathroom off the living room, right, or whatever. And I think that's what they were doing, is picking what was okay and retaining that. And you have to also remember, I think key to this, too, is it's Mayo and Wolf. They were here. So they have their guys, for lack of a better word, right? Like, usually when you have these cleanups, like, everybody thought Bill might bring people with him to Atlanta, right? If he was going to get the Atlanta job, Parcells was famous for it.
Sure.
Parcells would bring in his guys.
Curtis Martin, right, yeah.
Right, like, or, but even lower level ones, like the Anthony Pleasants or,
right,
like, you know, some random offensive lineman guy. And the difference here is their guys were already our guys. Like, they were already here. So when Gerard Mayo and Elliot Wolf are looking at, who do we want? Well, Mike Onwenu is a good lineman. We want him to be the core of the line. Kyle Duggar, or Duggar, either pronunciation's fine, we want to be a core back-end guy. And I think, so you wouldn't have cared as much, in a way, if Mayo was bringing in his guys had he been hired from, let's just say, the Browns. He was the Browns defensive coordinator, and he brought in Mike Onwenu and Kyle Duggar. Right? You'd be like, oh, he's getting his own guys. He's starting the culture.
Right.
The difference here is they were already here. We know them, and they were Bill's guys. And then the whole thing about, well, the team's not talented, but you're keeping some of the talent. That's where it gets muddy, because I think they were bringing their guys in. The Parcells style, they were bringing their guys in.
Yeah, I agree. I think that that's a big part of it, because a lot of the people still in the front office and still on the coaching staff are Bill guys. I mean, that's just a fact. Like,
right.
Mayo was a Bill guy. Groh's a Bill guy. Wolf was a Bill. Like, they were all here. Basically, the entire front office is still pretty much intact, minus Bill Belichick. Same with the coaching staff, minus Bill and Stephen Belichick, I should say, too. But, like, that's it. You know, you got a lot of the same faces. Bill O'Brien's gone, I guess. But, in general, you have mostly same people, familiar faces. And I think that's something that was a conscious decision on the part of Robert Kraft. That being said, you do have to field a team, okay?
Yes.
You can't just go out and replace everybody. And it is fair to say that over the last 5 years, Bill Belichick's drafts have been pretty bad. I mean, you know, these are guys who, as I said before, I'm not necessarily sure if Bill was here that he would have re-signed all those guys, because a lot of them didn't really achieve all that much in the time that they were here and didn't end up being what the expectations were set for them when they were drafted. Now, a lot of them are off the roster. Like, the real bad ones aren't even here anymore. These are the best of what's left over. And I think in some cases you got some decent players. In a lot of cases it was, well, we got to put somebody out there on the left end. Like, it's got to be someone. And we have Josh Uche here. We can get him for $3 million, so let's just go ahead and do it. They could have gotten better running backs. They could have gotten better offensive linemen. There's a lot of other things they could have done, but they didn't. And I think in some ways that has to do with the spending habits or lack thereof of the front office and the ownership group, but part of it's also that the drafts were no good.
Right, and like they're even free agency. So Josh Uche, I think he's a perfect example of a cheap guy that you're like, we need a roster. We got to have some guys. And he's willing to come back at whatever this deal is, 1 year, $3 million or something. I don't think they really wanted him, but they didn't not want him either. He was just kind of a roster filler.
Right.
Or even if you had a better young up-and-coming tight end, you probably would have wanted to move on from Hunter Henry potentially. I'm not sure he's a guy that fits their cycle, to use Gerard Mayo's word. But you got to have a tight end. You got to have a functional offense, and the best tight end you can probably get is the guy that's comfortable where he is in Hunter Henry. So I do think there was some circumstances, but I absolutely think their actions tell you. Year one was retain the guys that are going to be part of the bridge that are actually already on the roster, and year two is going to be more aggressively to add and to complement that with a boatload of spending, some of which they have to do as part of the reach the minimum floor of the salary cap.
Floor, right, yeah.
Yeah, of the next couple of years, the 3 year average. And I think you're going to see that. But the bigger question here is, does Bill have blame? Absolutely. Should they be blaming Bill? Absolutely not. Move on. Everyone knows it. Anyone who cares about enough about it to really think about or debate roster construction already knows Bill's drafts are a part of why you are where you are, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so stop talking about it. So, like, don't address that you had a bad roster, you inherited a bad roster. Don't address if you're Robert Kraft on some Breakfast Club. Don't address.
Well, Robert Kraft's Bill. Never going to stop doing it. But in fairness, Mayo said, I'm not going to answer that, right? I mean, he did. In doing so, he sort of implicated Belichick.
Yes.
But he didn't say it out loud. He wasn't like, you know why. Like, he said, hey, I'm not going to touch that.
I think he did say, he said, you know why, or something to that effect. Like, he acknowledged.
He said, you tell me, is what he said.
I think I'll leave that to you guys to talk about. Or so, like, he knows that people know, right? Like,
sure.
I just, stop blaming Bill. He's gone. Everybody knows what Bill did great. Everybody except Lombardi knows what Bill did bad. Because Lombardi pretends Bill was great right up into the end. He wasn't. Like, why would you stop trusting him? Because he made a lot of really bad decisions over the last 3, 4, 5 years, right? From Tom Brady straight on through to Matt Patricia, to individual draft picks, to individual trades, to wide receivers. He made some hellacious decisions. That's why he's no longer the head coach of the New England Patriots and the general manager. But Lombardi doesn't see that. Lombardi is like the ultimate super fan. He just sees 6 trophies, and that's all Bill ever represents.
Right. Yeah, it's true. And, you know, he's not going to, his fellow podcast co-host Matt Patricia, he's not going to throw him under the bus in any of these things either. You know that. So the question, I guess, here, before we get to the Patriots Pillars Power Rankings,
can't wait,
Andy Hart, the last question I have about this is, I agree. I think that Mayo and Kraft and everybody should shut up about Belichick. But when is it appropriate for Patriots fans and everybody else to stop blaming Belichick? Because I don't think 6 games into the new season is enough time to have gone by. I think that's him saying that, hey, when are you going to stop blaming Bill for everything? It's like, well, we're still very much in the first half of the season with a roster that's he's still left in shambles. So it's going to at least be to the end of this year. I don't know. You want to go beyond this year and call it whiny, then I could maybe see that. But as you said, his fingerprints are all over this roster. It's definitely still a lot of blame to go in his direction for this roster right now.
Yeah, when you are through, like, next offseason cycle, the March and April of next, I don't want to hear about Bill anymore, because you've now had two drafts that included a top three pick and probably another top 3 to 5 pick. You've had an offseason where you had $100 million to spend. You're going to have an offseason where you had $130 million to spend. This is on you now. And I'd even blend in that one little bridge year where Elliot Wolf and Matt Groh had at least some input, right? It was more collaborative and right. Whatever. Like, and we had Matt Groh telling us, he, you know, you want fast players, you got to draft fast players. That's why we drafted Tyquan Thornton and Pierre Strong. And that's why neither guy has ever done a damn thing for the New England Patriots, right? Like, so they get at least partial blame for 2023, and then 2024 is all them, and 2025 is all them. I don't want to hear about Bill anymore. He's going to be employed somewhere else. Let Bill do his thing. You do your thing. Stand on your own 2 feet, financially, trade-wise, everything, and we're going to judge you next spring.
Okay, there you go. All right, it is time now for a segment that I have not touched at all. This is the brainchild of Andy Hart. It is called the Patriots Pillars Power Rankings, and that's all I'm going to say. Take it away, Andy.
So, I think we all, no matter how much you minimize it, you can. Some people just say you either need a top five quarterback or a top five roster.
Right.
And that's how you get to the Super Bowl. That's how you become a Super Bowl contender. I think it goes deeper than that. I think there are five pillars of every organization. And I think the more of the five that you feel really
like the five
good about,
pillars of Islam.
Yeah, I don't know that we need to go down that road.
Probably
I think
not.
We can
okay.
just stick to
I hear five pillars. That's immediately what I think of, but go ahead.
So, yeah, we're going to stick to the five pillars of a professional football organization.
Okay.
And the better you feel about each of those five, the better you're going to do. The better you're going to feel about your team and its chances to succeed and or fail. And I think when you turn those over, you have a chance to get better. And when you're in a transitional phase, it's like, well, do I really trust them? For example, when you were in the old days, you were ranking the five with Robert Kraft, Bill Belichick, and, oh, I should probably list the pillars. But the pillars are obviously quarterback,
yep.
franchise QB, mm-hmm. head coach, executives.
Yep. Executives, plural.
Yeah, like just sort of the front office.
Okay.
Roster.
Yep.
Overall roster, not including quarterback, and ownership.
Owner.
To me, those are the five pillars of a professional football team. And in the old days, Robert Kraft, Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, kind of Bill Belichick twice, and then guys like Gronk and her and Edelman, and right, like, and you were like, ah, Bill's a great coach, so he's number one. Tom's a great quarterback, so he's number two. Oh, Tom's going to usurp Bill. Tom's playing great, right? So you rank them.
Okay.
It's easy to do when you're winning, right? It's all fun. It's like success pie. But when you're losing and when you're in a rebuild and you're in a transition, I think it matters now more than ever. And we can also decide, like a good AP news story, if you're in the bottom two, if you're fourth or fifth, you might be the biggest problem on the team, and maybe your consideration for getting cut off, getting fired, getting moved on from, whichever one is in that slot.
Yeah,
so,
well, except the owner, but yeah.
Well, yeah, he can't be, but we can hope, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, what was it? The Pistons fans were like, fire him or whatever. They wanted to fire the owner.
Right.
They wanted to sell the team, fire the owner, whatever they were chanting. So you want to go first from 5 to 1. I want you to power rank the pillars of the Patriots today, this day in October 2024, starting with the part of the team you have the least faith in.
I have the least faith in...
I'm going to compare our list, too. I'm
the executives. I think executives are number 5 for me.
Executives.
Execs,
okay.
Number 5. Number 4, I'm going to say the head coach. Don't have a lot of faith in him.
Well, it's coaching.
All the coaches.
I want Alex Van Pelt and DeMarcus Covington included in there.
Sure. All right. Yeah. Put that. I'll include them. That doesn't drag them up any higher for me. So yeah. There you go. Number 3, I would say the roster. No, number 2. Number 3, I'd say the owner. Number 2, right. I'd say the roster, and number 1, I'd say the QB. And that's honestly, that's because everybody else is so bad. Like, there's been a glimmer of hope here from the quarterback. There's a glimmer of hope, and that glimmer of hope doesn't exist with any other part of these pillars. There's no glimmer of hope with the ownership. I don't think that the roster is 1 or 2 years away from being good and being, you know, what the Houston Texans turned themselves into. I think that the head coach is locked in for at least another year, and, you know, the owner I don't really feel great about either. So it's really – and the roster sucks. So, like, for me, I think it's QB. Everything else is kind of tied for fifth. And I'm not even really all that high on the QBs. Played one game. If one game is the only glimmer of hope that I have, is that one game from the quarterback, that's it. This exercise is really depressing for me, Andy. I'm very depressed now reading this.
It may be, but if you look at it a different way, I'll go to five, but I'll start with my number one.
Okay.
I have the same number one as you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a quarterback, and I think it's
that's damning.
Awesome.
That's very damning.
No, I think it's awesome.
How is that
positive?
Awesome?
Because we both believe you have a franchise quarterback. We both believe your quarterback is the best part of the organization. I think that's a good thing. I think that's a key thing moving forward. Now, the fact that we both believe that after one game that they lost by 20, not ideal.
No,
not ideal.
Not
I'll be honest
all.
There. But the and some of it is the way he carries himself, right? Like, if he had played the same way on Sunday.
And powdered afterwards.
Well, was talking like Jalen Polk.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you feel about it differently?
Definitely.
Like, I have nothing to feel badly about with Drake May right now other than this little sliver of idea that he asked for an MRI, and I don't love it, but I'm not going to let that bother me until it really becomes an issue that I need to deal with. Okay, so Drake May's number one on both our lists. He is the top pillar of the Patriots organization. We're back to the glory days where it's all about the quarterback, right,
oh, yes.
Baby?
Definitely.
Let's go. Okay, number five, I have coaching. I don't know if I want any of these coaches moving forward. The head coach, the offensive coordinator, or the defensive coordinator. And that is alarming 6 weeks into a new coaching staff. Like, that is scary to me that you may not have your coaches on either side of the ball or the head coach. So I got coaching five. I got roster four. And this is thanks to the exercise we did twice this week with the offensive and defensive players.
Yeah.
The only building blocks are Drake May, Christian Barmore, and Christian Gonzalez. And I don't even feel great about Christian Barmore right now. Not sure where that stands. I don't love that because you did have a high first-round pick and had a high pick in each round. I feel like I should be more excited about the roster than I am. There's a lot of holes on this roster. Three executives. So I do believe Elliott Wolf was born and bred for this. Like, he grew up in the NFL. He's got an interesting pipeline of experience. And I'm giving him credit for what he did in April. He took Drake May.
Okay.
He didn't take a trade. He didn't screw it up. And if you hit on your quarterback, that buys you time. He did that. Number two is the owner. Here's where it's like, oh, Hart, you can take the boy out of Gillette, but not the Gillette out of the boy. Okay, you worked for him forever. But I don't think you luck into 30-plus years of competitive success in the National Football League. Like, he's been around the block a number of times. Now, I know there's a weird part here because there's the transitional Jonathan part, which, honestly, I don't feel as great about that as I do the Robert Kraft tenure. But I think they're going to spend. I do think Robert Kraft wants to win, and I think he wants to win sooner rather than later. And then you get to number one where we both feel great about the quarterback. Number one, baby. So I just think this is something we should do maybe after the season, right? Like, come January, the season ended. We'll probably feel differently about the coaches.
This can
and
all
Drake
shift.
May.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
This is all very much subject to change, yes.
Yeah, so I think this is like an every 3 months kind of exercise. After the season, do it again. After free agency in the draft, somewhere in there, do it again. Because the roster is going to change, but we're also going to feel differently about Elliott Wolf and his executive and ownership. If you're right and they don't spend, and they go into the offseason with $137 million, and we're talking about next July still having like $68 million they didn't spend, then I will not have the owner at number two on my list. I can promise you
I'll
that.
I'll move him down to three, damn it.
No, <Nope, watch>. Five.
All right.
It'll be five.
Well, there you go. Those are the Patriots Pillars Power Rankings. And it's a good thing we got these Mike socks here because that would be a tough one otherwise. And it paints a grim picture right now. It could change. We'll see. Maybe it'll be different. But right now it doesn't look great. 617-779-7937. We'll get to your phone calls and a couple of rookie quarterbacks in action last night in Thursday Night Football. One of them looked okay. We'll get to that next. Rough night for the old rattler. It's Christian Arkey and Andy Hart, WEEI Afternoons. Nice to have you with us here today on this Friday. Last night was an ugly one. Broncos got up big, did not give it back. I gave out a lot of same-game parlays with the work we do with FanDuel.
How'd it go?
Did Cortland Sutton play? Did he play in the game? I don't think I did not see him catch a ball. I did not see a ball
anything.
Go his way.
He
Alvin Kamara had, what, 2 yards? Did he finish with 2 yards?
So, speaking of bad parlays,
Holy moly, I may have
decided to do an Alvin Kamara parlay, which I took over receptions, over receiving yards, and an anytime touchdown. He got the over on receptions, but you know how many yards those 6 receptions accumulated? 14.
He averaged 14 yards.
2-point-something yards per reception.
2.3, and he finished with 10 rushing yards. 7 carries, 10 rushing yards. That's under a yard and a half per carry. This Saints team... unrecognizable from that team that came out like gangbusters in the first 3 weeks and was putting up 45, 50 points, it seemed like, every single week. I know that Carr's out, and I understand they started falling off before he went down.
Carolina in one of those too. Like the schedule is a little different, but they have injuries. That was the I actually think I had solid logic in my Kamara parlay. Mm-hmm. I was like, he's their only guy. They got to get him the ball. But you know who else also thought that? The Broncos.
Yep.
And there was the flaw with my parlay.
They certainly did, and it was. I mean, it was ugly. It was ugly from start to finish. And what you just heard there, that scoop and score, was such a slapstick looking play.
Oh my
God. The bad snap, first of all, he runs into his own lineman, he fumbles, he tries to pick it back, the guy's running away, he gets steamrolled. It was like a Benny Hill show. It was really it was really ugly, and I think just an indication of how in a lot of these cases you're one bad hit away from, no matter what you look like, you're one bad hit away from being a clown show. You could say that about the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs are one hit to Patrick Mahomes away from probably looking not too dissimilar from that. And I don't know if they'd lose to the Broncos like that. The Broncos, who, by the way, Bo Nix didn't have some great game. He made a throw that went all over Twitter the next day. It was really funny. It was during the game they showed it. He had two guys wide open on the left. He threw it right between, perfectly right between them. Neither one of them even went for it.
It was like that old drunk thing, like, oh, I see three guys. Well, hit the one in the middle. The
right,
one in the middle
exactly.
didn't exist for him. It was the other two that were real. But that may not have even been his worst throw. He hit Honey Badger in the chest with what should have been the easiest interception he's ever had. Unfortunately, he dropped it. So, yeah, but a couple rookie quarterbacks in a primetime Thursday night game looked like rookie quarterbacks, but obviously Denver got a little ground game going. They ran the ball with Javonte Williams.
Mm-hmm. Nick's had some good runs, too.
Yeah, he did have some good runs, and that's what I want Drake May to show and use. And but this was also maybe a little eye-opening, because remember there were people, I shouldn't say a ton of people, but there were some Spencer Rattler fans out there that thought he was grossly underrated. And there was that one guy, remember the scout on Twitter that, like, as a former NFL scout, I think Spencer Rattler should be the number one overall pick and he's great and all these things. And
that was Stiz's burner account, I think.
I also forgot that Spencer Rattler was the number one recruit in college football when he went to Oklahoma.
I didn't know that.
And how far he's fallen.
I mean, very, very cool name.
Oh,
yeah. Spencer Rattler is about as cool of a name in football history as there is.
And I don't think he stinks, but I don't think he's a franchise quarterback either. There's a reason he fell to the, what do you go, the fifth round, I believe.
Yeah, something like that.
He was the next quarterback after the first round run on quarterbacks. But this could be a cautionary tale. Like everybody that was getting all excited about Bo Nix, we'll see. We'll see how good Bo Nix is moving forward. And he's got Sean Payton, and, you know, they had Drew Brees on the broadcast talking about how he thinks, like, this is a good fit, Bo Nix and Sean Payton, and he was a good fit. Although they were overrating. Did you hear Tony Gonzalez saying Drew Brees is a top? Did he say top five all time quarterback?
Yes, he was. They were very much. And listen, I get it. I mean, they were there's a Saints game, and Brees is a great. I mean, he's a great player, but five all time, I don't know about that.
How about just say one of the all time greats? Don't put a number. Like top five. You're going to list five quarterbacks all time.
He's top five of his generation, I'd say. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. There's a maybe there. Maybe. There might be ties for fifth.
Brady, Manning, Roethlisberger. These maybe. Yeah, Rodgers, Breeze, I'd say. That's five. That's five right there, right?
Okay, if that's your generation. So we don't include Mahomes as a different generation, right?
I'd probably cut it. That was the end of his, you know, if his career was around when Mahomes started. So I'd say
and
it's
I
right
think,
around that, yeah.
Honestly, I think Philip Rivers is in the conversation.
Rivers, that's a good one. Rivers, yeah.
Like,
he never won anything, but yeah.
No, he didn't. And Brees only won one. I think both Brees
Same
and
Rodgers
got overrated for only winning one together. And the difference there is I think both are considered a great QB and a great coach. Rodgers didn't have a great coach. I think we know now that he did not have
Absolutely
a great coach.
Absolutely not, no.
So, but I thought it was a little over the top. But yeah, that was an ugly game that is a – because I think there's been this upswing of positivity. Even today, they were asking Drake May if he watched Caleb Williams basically light up the Jags and if he learned from that. And he's like, yeah, watching him run around out there, I learned from that. But this was a sobering night for the rookie quarterbacks.
Yeah, I would agree. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. Let's go to the phones. A lot of you have been waiting patiently here to chime in on everything Patriots related. The person waiting the longest is our good friend Stephen Fall River. Hi,
right
Steve.
Now.
Hello.
Thank you, buddy. Thank
Steve.
You. Hello, guys.
Hi, Steve.
How are you guys?
Thank you for fitting us into your afternoon. What's up?
I was talking to a customer, so I had to transition nicely
to
you guys. I apologize.
Good.
And you guys are good guys, too. So I got
a good guy, too, Steve. What's up?
Thank you. You were talking yesterday about a rebuild, and you theorized if they kept the same infrastructure, meaning the coaching staff and the other people, is it really a rebuild? Let's play pretend and say it's a total rebuild right now. You just brought up something good today. Are you going to rebuild, shoot for a top-five quarterback, or are you going to rebuild with a top-five roster? I think it's harder to build a top-five roster. And, yeah, you could hit strike lightning in a bottle and get a top-five quarterback, but that's pretty tough to get a top-five quarterback. And I'd like to build on a top-five roster, which means you have to have good drafts piled on top of each other. Yep. And if you look at it, and I was at the beginning of the last rebuild. I went season tickets in 91, and I saw the rebuild with my own eyes. And if anybody wants to look at what is, if they weren't alive, then you go back and look at the drafthistory.com. You see the 93, the 96 draft. Add in Adam Vinatieri as an undrafted free agent, the 96 draft. You say, wow, holy smokes. We not only set up the 90s, we set up the first three Super Bowls in these four drafts. And you're saying you have to have that. You have to have these drafts.
Yes, you do. And I agree with you, Stephen. Thanks for the call. Thanks for waiting. I do agree that you have to have a basis to build off of. And we did this exercise over the last week here of building blocks and foundational pieces on this team. And through all those drafts, you don't have much. You just don't. I'm sorry. Like, this is a bad roster with not a lot of young building block type talents. You got players. I mean, there's not everybody on the whole team stinks. I agree with you there. But you don't have that thing they had in the 90s when those, you know, the Lawyer Malloy and Ty Law and Bruschi and Ted Johnson and, you know, everybody. Like, that was a pretty good run there. And that team didn't win anything. But you knew that you had players there that you wanted to hold on to. That was a lot more dubious this time around. They went out and re-signed a bunch of guys that you looked at and you were like, okay, I guess this is better than nothing, but no one was really excited about it, and I think that's a big difference.
Well, and the example, I used a bad example earlier when I said Hunter Henry. The real example is Mike Onwenu. Mike Onwenu is a guy that is not a Pro Bowler. He's probably your best offensive lineman, but he's not a Pro Bowler, and he was going to make money somewhere. In an ideal world, don't you think you had another guy where you're like, you know what? We're going to let Mike Onwenu walk. We're not going to spend $55 million on him because we drafted so-and-so in the third or fourth round 2 years ago.
We got Caden Waller. We got somebody coming up in the wings who's going to be just fine.
But they don't. Their line has been terrible, and I think they were almost had their hands tied. Like, we got to keep Onwenu. We got to have something to build around on the offensive line because he's not great. You know, there's other guys that you're going to, you know, when you re-sign a Rob Gronkowski or something like that, there's no question, right? It's just how much money and how long, like, figure it out. But Mike Onwenu, when you start re-signing, that's the type of player, or even both safeties. Like, one of them, you probably should have said, yeah, I'll let it walk because we got a guy, Marte Mapu, in a year. Maybe he plays this year and next year you feel better about it. Whatever.
That was the Belichick way. That's the way he did. That's the way they restocked and the way they built their roster.
Until now. Until lately. Like, it's failed lately. And that's because every team is going to, you know, hopefully you draft really well and you decide, well, I have to re-sign Christian Gonzalez and I have to re-sign Drake May. Like, those just become obvious ones. And how do you save money? You don't re-sign guys like Mike Onwenu to $55 million contracts because you've drafted or you have a couple guys ready to go, but they didn't. This isn't off. They convinced themselves that Chuks Okorafor could play left tackle.
Yep.
But they weren't convinced they had anybody to step in as a quasi right tackle, right guard for Mike Onwenu. So what do we have to do? Write a big paycheck. And people like you and others say, wait, why are we spending all that money to retain everybody? How are we going to get better if we're just retaining everybody? But the problem, again, goes back to not a deep enough talent pool to make good decisions.
Yeah, you're right about that. Let's take one more call here before the top of the hour. Ralph in Cranston, go ahead.
Hey, guys. Look, Belichick had a lousy last couple of years, you know, in so many ways. But, you know, in that particular thing, a year in the past, you know, yes, we all agree. Kraft, maybe look at your own team. I mean, we've had two arrests here in a month. Now, they look so bad with Peppers because they should have suspended him. You're innocent to proven guilty. He should have been suspended right away before the league even did anything. You look bad there. And even disgusting is this latest one where they're allowing one of their Plesca Perez in Providence. They are so, I mean, there's nothing racist about that department. He is so aware of everything. Now, you've got a player driving down the road with an unregistered car. God knows if it was even insured.
Yeah, Ralph, real quick, we know the details of the stop. And just for the record, he deleted that tweet, and I'd imagine he deleted it because the team said, hey, take that tweet down right now. I'd imagine that's right, why yeah. the tweet got deleted, where he said the cops are being racist, right. Just for the record. But go ahead.
Yeah, but maybe he should watch him. Look at this. The quality of his own play is the character, because we got two now that have an arrest. You know, this is a team that we had 20 years of amazing, you know, a run. Now we're ready for it, but let's keep Belichick out of it.
Okay, well, Belichick had plenty of guys with problems during his 20 years, so let's not act like this is some new thing here. Even in the last couple of years, Jack Jones in the airport, like, there's been lawyers walking around with Patriots players for more than just the last couple weeks, so let's keep that in mind, too, not to mention, you know, the real bad stuff that we've been watching on FX on Tuesday nights these last few weeks
right.
as well.
And that's a good example. Like, he's a guy, like Ralph says, like, know your player's character. Like, that's impossible. You don't know anyone's character, right? Like, I don't know you that well. You don't know me that well. You don't know what I'm doing after we sign off at 6 o'clock or what
no
I'm doing
idea.
At 1 a.m. on a Saturday night, right? Like, I think you're a pretty good guy. I'd like to think you think I'm a pretty good guy, but you never really know. And Robert, what did he say? Was it duped? Is that the word he used about
yes.
Hernandez?
Mm-hmm.
Duped. And I think there's some truth to that. Like, they were duped a little bit, but they also deal in a world where every team has 55 guys that have crazy backgrounds. Not all 55 have crazy backgrounds, but a lot of them have, you know, red flags, crazy backgrounds. I mean,
and also that whole dupe thing, just for the rap, Brandon Lloyd and Deion Branch and Wet and all these people came out in the documentary and they were like, you don't hang out with Aaron after the game. You don't go out with him. You don't hang out with him. You don't see him anytime except in practice. Just stay away from him all the time. So people in the building knew that Aaron Hernandez was on, maybe not completely off the rails like he was,
right.
but there was duped. I feel like duped is really sort of shirking your responsibility.
He's going to talk about taking baths with his mother. You just got to ignore
right.
it.
It's like, okay. And like, you don't hang out with him after
but
practice.
My point is, I think there's a bunch of guys you don't hang around with.
Like, probably, yeah.
I think Corey Dillon was a guy you didn't, for a certain phase of his life, it seems like he's come out of it maybe now, but I don't know that you wanted to hang around with him. For a phase of his life,
he had
sure.
When he was a teenager, he had like a long criminal record.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And yeah. I'm not sure Brandon Lloyd for a while was a guy you wanted to hang out with. So
no,
I just,
right.
I think there's a lot of guys that have gone through NFL locker rooms that, like, Lawrence Taylor's the classic one, right?
Sure.
Like, the first, Bill's first superstar was doing a lot of stuff, right? Outside
sure
the
was.
Locker room and outside the stadium.
And right there on the sideline, according to lore.
Right. And so I just think we've never been in that world intimately to see everything that goes on. So to just sit back and say, get better players with better character. Yeah, that's easier said than done. Because
yeah.
guess what? I think if you had a roster of 53 Saints, you would stink.
Yeah, you probably
honestly.
Would.
I'm just being honest. Maybe that's a pessimistic view of the world. But if you had 53 Saints, I think you'd stink.
I think you probably would, too. 617-779-7937. We'll get to more of your phone calls. And Jerod Mayo said something earlier this week about the Devontae Adams and Amari Cooper trades that did not sit right with me. I missed it when it happened, but we'll get to it next.